There are those who say that life is an illusion, and that reality is simply a figment of the imagination.
Look who the birds have brought us this week. Welcome, and congratulations for crossing the threshold of realities. There's much to share if you know the language of the birds. Welcome back to the God Box Cafe. I have a special guest that I cannot sing her praises enough for serving as a role model and an example, living the dream in my view and walking her talk. This magnificent person has a PhD in history, and I'm betting that that may very well be why she has committed herself to single-handedly demonstrating that history should not repeat itself. And the way for that to happen is to take information that has been gleaned by our ancestors and cultivated to a point where certain principles apply no matter what era of life you existing. And I'm sure she embraces the principles of preparing for seven generations forward. And I, for one, am very grateful that she is giving us of her time. She is someone who has an insatiable passion for permaculture and living with the land in a regenerative way. She is teaching permaculture food growing with a community of supporting specialists and spreading enthusiasm for growing food and making medicine in every nook and cranny available. Please give a warm welcome to the magnificent Angela Durante, doctor of history and passionate gardening expert. She is not afraid to get her hands dirty, and she is going to show us how we can do likewise and get back to the fertility of the land. Welcome, Angela.
Good morning, Yvonne. Gosh, what a humbling introduction. Thank you. It feels really good to be here. Yeah, that's what we're doing, right? We're returning to the land, or coming. Yeah, it is a coming back because we are of it. So how close do we want to work in rhythm with it? Because it's supporting us to live, but are we supporting it to live? And how can we be more symbiotic? Because it like grows our food. It grows our food. My mind is blown every day. How does it do that for us? How does it do that? How does it know what we need? And when did we stop listening?
Dr. Durante, can you give us a bit of a background on how you went from a PhD in history to cultivating the land?
Well, I did grow up on a hobby farm, so my connection to food growing in particular has been lifelong. But I spent some time away. I went to graduate school. I got a PhD in history and I got my Bachelor of Education. I was going to be a school teacher and then maybe a university professor. And I loved the actual history itself. I loved the history, but I wasn't loving doing the history because history can be a very sedentary work. And I was going to be away from the land a lot. So that lifestyle wasn't really going to work for me. So I took time off to have my kids. And after a series of moves, we ended up on this really dilapidated small 2-acre property in the country. And that was our foray. It's dilapidated. It's been unloved and even abused in some spaces. So what do we have to do to bring it back, and to get it in a regenerative space? So we got excited primarily because it was a century old schoolhouse, and we moved in, and the goal was to take this 4,000 square foot old schoolhouse and bring it back to life and take it off the grid. And I think that's what really started our passion about giving and taking with the landscape, because before then it had been a little bit more automatic. But now we put a geothermal system in the ground to heat the home, and you start thinking more about how the earth is doing the work of heating you when you're cold and cooling you when you're warm. And that relationship kind of extrapolated out. And then we just started building gardens, growing more food. It's addictive. Anybody who does this knows you get in and it's really hard not to go full force and end up with way more than you started with.
Say that you are addressing an audience that is predominantly urban and living in an urban environment, which is very disconnected from even so far as your feet touching soil, let alone anything else. It can be very daunting for someone who is used to getting their groceries delivered to them. And where would you start with respect to giving them an understanding of the future riding on us being self-sufficient and creating an environment that produces a harvest that we reap the benefits from, but it also involves actively participating in nurturing from seed to fruit? Where would you recommend they start on something if they don't have the land by which they can do exactly what you're talking about?
I think what could be really helpful first is still recognizing that even if you live in an urban space, you're still being supported by nature. She's outside and she's talking to you. So you're not separated from it just because you live in an urban space. You still are of it. Once you've got that established, I think you can start thinking about maybe what are the ways in which you are most bound to the systems that you don't maybe appreciate. So let's say that, like in my case, for example, we don't like to necessarily rely on over-the-counter prescription drugs for some of our ailments. So we work more with roots and we make oils and salves and these kinds of things to support our health. So if you picked one thing, for example, one place of connection where you're not loving maybe how that relationship is going. So maybe it's food growing. Maybe you really love your teas. And maybe it could be, well, this year I commit myself to growing 3 of my favorite tea plants. It's so easy. Mint, chamomile, bergamot. It's beautiful. And you produce your own very first nourishing thing that you grew from seed. 3 simple plants that grow extremely well. And then when you do that, I think it opens the gateway. And suddenly you realize, oh, okay, wait a minute. This all exists for our betterment. It's here for a reason. They're not weeds. They're pioneers. They're coming in to remediate, to fix, to build. So I think that's where we might want to start, like just with the idea of, well, what are the ways in which some kind of relationship with the system is not serving you? And how can you infuse more of your own personal energy into building more sustainability in that aspect of your life? I'm trying to be general here because I can only imagine that your listeners live in a variety of contexts, but I'll have you know, like there's one, she was a student a long time ago, but now she comes every week to the homestead and works. Her name is Anna. Anna lives in an apartment in Toronto, and in her apartment, Anna grows an entire row of lettuce. Right now she's growing green peppers and she's growing a cucumber vine. She's playing that out to see how it goes. She grows medicines on her patio outside in the summertime. So her relationship to the grocery store, for example, is so different. And in the winter, she's picking lettuce from her hallway. She's growing mushrooms. She's got a vermicompost bin underneath her sink. Anna lives in Toronto. Anna doesn't have soil to plant in, not in the ground. But she's really finding more and more ways to be more self-sufficient. And like, it's thrilling. She needs more space. It's obvious she needs more. She's going to go vertical.
Could you elaborate a little bit on that? This is starting to catch the imagination of the public at large. So this whole idea of vertical farming is something that is quite manageable, even if you're in a confined situation. And let's face it, here in North America, particularly in Canada, our growing season is pretty short. So unless you have a greenhouse per se. So how would the vertical gardening contribute towards that same principle of space may be limited and temperatures need to be controlled?
Yeah, like there are a lot of folks who are making great use of those vertical towers and growing greens, for example, throughout the entire winter. And yeah, that's a great tool. Now, I would look really carefully at what additives you're having to put, especially if it's a hydroponic system, and what kinds of things, your additives that you're having to put into the water. Make sure you're cool with what you're putting in the water, because that is the nutrition for your plants, right? It's what happens in the absence of soil. You need to feed the water that's watering your plants, nourishing your plants. that could be a really great option. There are also grow tents that people are using now to grow things like high density kale, for example, all winter long. So we have one, it's like a box and it's got legs, right? And there's a box and then it's in the grow tent. So it has its own little microclimate. And sometimes when you're growing something that's really important to you, you might really need to hang on to, you might need to control, like mushrooms, for example, are grown in tents also. And it's great because you can control the humidity and the temperature. So those are two really easy ones. What else could you do? Well, apartment buildings, if you have a south-facing window, there's not much you can't do, frankly. There's so much you can do. So orient yourself. If you're facing south, that means that you're going to get sun most of the day. And a lot of the things that you want to grow probably need sun most of the day. Or you can start getting those multiple tiered grow light stations where they have the fluorescent bulbs on each level and you can be growing microgreens. Microgreens are really easy because you just have your trays with a substrate. So substrate is like the soil that you would grow into, or coco coir. There are other things that you can use, and your seed, and it will grow into kind of a micro stage where you have thousands and thousands of little greens and very high density. If you need a really low tech solution, it's really fabulous to start with sprouting, because basically sprouting is like growing on your countertop. So a mason jar with a screen on top, right? And you're rinsing, let's say, mung beans. And you rinse them twice a day and put your jar upside down to let all the water come out. And that is a form of gardening. You're taking a seed and you're sprouting it. And that seed at that moment, that sprout that you're eating, is about the most nutritious moment in that plant's life. And that's hard to believe because you're thinking, well, but this could produce 30 pods for me and that's more nutritious, isn't it? But the density inside of a sprout is... So like if you have very few resources, this is not only an easy place to start, it's a really rewarding place to start. You could go a long way on mung bean sprouts. They're my favorite, obviously. That's why I'm talking so much about them. I love mung beans. I love making sprouts in the winter. It's a great way to just keep your nutrition up and not going to the grocery store in the wintertime when a lot of it is being trucked in. And listen, we have a personal responsibility, if you don't mind me saying so, for considering where our food is coming from in the wintertime, because we are going to rely on places like Mexico or California to continue growing food for us because we can't sustain ourselves in winter. And that's a lot to ask of those places because they are suffering. Water is becoming a serious problem in these two places in particular, and that's going to make it really hard for them to grow what we all need. So the more we can start to rely a little bit more on our skills and what kinds of things we can plan for in advance, we call it more sustainable. What's actually kind of alleviating the pressure on the system as well. It helps on both ends. So, and then we can help other people, because if you know how to do it, you can show your neighbor. This stuff needs to be demystified. This is easy. Growing food, sprouting, making your medicine, it's easy. This is easier than cooking your pasta dish.
Those are certainly words that are going to be encouraging for those people who don't even know where to start and could be in full overwhelm just based on the conversation we're having so far. I have to share, many years ago, easily over 15 years ago, I saw a movie called One Man, One Cow, One World. And this was based on a biography of a gentleman in New Zealand who was in his 80s, who was brought to India to reteach the farmers there. And this is as a direct consequence of having, I'm not a fan of Big Agra or anything that Monsanto stands for. And the notion of farmers having seeds that cannot be reproduced. So a sterile yield with the notion of having a good crop, a bumper crop in the first year, and then having sterile soil subsequently has led to no end of disaster on the part of mass farming. So this gentleman was brought in and started to demonstrate how we need to interact with the soil. He even went so far as describing that one should be watering in a spiral because the energy of that spiral movement is part of the creation process. And so that mindfulness and getting acquainted with the soil, the fact that cow dung was used to regenerate the nutritional benefits of the soil that had been depleted. It was utterly astonishing. And honestly, it changed my life right there and then. So this whole idea of communing with the ground and knowing the fecundity of that soil, could you elaborate a little bit more on that whole notion of how we can restore and revitalize the soil so we can have this constant cycle of fertility?
Yeah, this is such a beautiful circle of life, because all of what we often consider waste becomes our primary infusion. So like when we compost, everything that is garbage and trash and poop and mess can be put together in a beautiful pile where it starts to commune. Okay. And I heard you say the word commune, it's sticking with me, because in the soil is already communing. It's been communing long before we came to step on it. In fact, when we step onto the soil, it is communing with itself and sending information across the way. So it well knows who we are, what we're here to do, what we need. So the soil is already doing that via mycorrhizal fungi. That is the layer that is beneath the top layer of soil that we see. And it is a wide, wide network that extends all over the earth, all over the earth. And it is sending information and sending nutrition. It makes the roots of plants 800 times more bioavailable to nutrition. So the work that this network, that this community is doing is phenomenal. And it's all happening beneath our feet. So where I think it's helpful for us to start thinking is like, well, how can I situate myself into that? As opposed to how can I make all of this do what I want it to do? What's actually already happening here? And how can I get in there and do good by it? And this is why permaculture is so great, because permaculture is a way of being in the world that encourages you to consider and to watch and to observe and then to position yourself within it. And if water's falling here, then this is where we collect water. And we don't need to produce all that waste. That can be restructured into something else. And the first principle of permaculture is to observe. You observe 100 hours and you act 1 hour. And it's just the principle of slowing down enough to see that things are already working in a particular way. So how can we then fit ourselves within that flow? How do we become part of that flow? And then we can start driving the flow to produce a yield, which is another principle of permaculture. And there you see that it is all there for us, not only for us, but it's there for us. Some people go so far as to take their seeds and put them in their mouth before they plant it, with the belief that the seed is thereby internalizing your needs and will produce what you need through its fruit. And boy, does that not blow a mind. Right? To think, wow, it really is that receptive, but we're treating it like it's inanimate and not interfacing with us in this very beautiful way. So we have to learn to interface better, right? We need to learn to become more of the community that is already there. And then as we do that, we evolve as people and we become more like the nature, in fact. And she's not perfect either. And that's why we're not perfect, because none of it needs to be perfect. We do have to reconsider our view of what is out there. Because we haven't been taught that. That's not how we were raised. We were raised to be like, the nature needs to be controlled and we need to dig some long holes. And yeah, I mean, sometimes we have to move some earth to make a project happen. But it's the relationship to that action that we have to take responsibility for it. So when we put in the geothermal, I was, oh, sweetheart, I'm so with you. This is going to be awesome because we want to engage you more. We know what you can do and we want to engage you more. And this is going to be so great. And like, I look over that field and I know she's there. I know she's under there pulling from the earth, and that the earth is giving to us in this really kind of low impact way. I know this is impossible for everybody. This is like heady stuff. When you start talking about systems that are required to take buildings off the grid, it's a lot of time, dedication, and dollars. So that's not possible. But one of the things we've learned here is that the most important thing that we ever could have started with and that we ended up doing in the end is reducing our consumption. That's way more important than trying to produce more energy. It's so much easier. It makes so much sense. So that's where I sit. I'm like a waste nothing. I don't want to waste anything. I want it all to get transitioned into something really usable and something we can be grateful for. And that's a big shift, because a lot of us waste a lot. just every time we buy something, we throw away another piece of plastic and we don't think about it. And so trying canning, getting into canning is a great way because you're reducing so much waste. There are a lot of ways. There are a lot of ways that we can, again, tying back to earlier, focus on the thing that you're discontented with. Well, I don't like my relationship, let's say, with gluten. I'm having gluten intolerance, let's say. Well, you know, what if I start growing my own teas, things that are beneficial to the microbiome and our immune system and our stomach lining, like bone broth? And maybe we invest in that way. So we find a farmer who we trust and you buy bones off them, make a bunch of broth, you can it away for winter. You've got two little tea plants that you grew, terrific, some mint and some calendula. The support that you're giving to your wellness is so much more than you can even imagine. You know, we have to scale it down. You don't need to run a big homestead. That's not what it takes. It doesn't have to be all or nothing. So I know I really went off there. I hope you're okay with that. That's how I feel.
Oh my God, no, that is vital. It's a question of a changing mindset, not necessarily for other cultures who have been more concerned with maintaining a tradition that has to do with living off the land. Case in point, the indigenous community I've been privileged enough to be working with, and their traditions are such that leaving a place better than the way that you found it, or not leaving a trace of your occupation in that space, that is very foreign to the vast majority of people who are so-called civilized and in a first world headspace. But I can't emphasize enough that the whole notion of the waste production that is geared towards this whole, let's call it what it is, this category of patriarchal take what you need, regardless of what you leave in your wake. So that short-sighted, non-nurturing way of dealing with the environment and each other cannot sustain us, plain and simple. And we have to make allowances for a paradigm shift of that magnitude. It is huge, and we have to take baby steps. And you are serving as a perfect example of that. So the things that perhaps our parents used to do when it came to making jam or tomato sauce or pickled tomatoes, all of these things we have to get reacquainted with, because that is the way that we will be able to put forward a future that will be far superior to the lifestyle we've been living, which is incredibly toxic and not life-affirming. So consumer madness, the idea of just accumulating things and not appreciating what is already out there. Case in point, I love dandelions. I don't believe in the word weed. I know what the value of the dandelion is, and the fact that it's proliferating our space means we've got liver issues, and that there may be a deficiency in nitrogen in the soil because so many people are manicuring their lawns, but they're not paying attention to the fact that the dandelion is there telling us something. So making a tincture from the roots and utilizing the blossoms, these are things that are fundamental to our well-being. And why do we need to go to a pharmaceutical when the medicine is right there in front of us? Did you want to speak to that further, Dr. Durante?
There's definitely a moment of unschooling, right? A period of unschooling that we need to do for ourselves in order to even get into the space where you can start doing what you're talking about. And I think it just requires, you have to step back and you have to go, okay, listen, I have been groomed for a particular world. Okay. So like I grew up in the 70s and the 80s, I was being groomed for a particular world and the 80s were booming. So as I was coming of age, it was like this idea that it's all about hustle, fake it till you make it. Get out there and make as much money as you can make and get the biggest house you can get and drive 5 cars. And that was a massive planetary distraction. Okay. So we got derailed. We did the whole thing. I mean, we had a house in the suburbs and we had jobs and we had our kids in the school system and we weren't growing in our own food. That was only 8 years ago for us. So I really do understand, but we have to go through that moment where we go, whoa, but that's not the actual world that I want to build. So how am I going to contribute in a way that's going to at least support a different paradigm, a different viewpoint, a different worldview, a different way of being? So there are a lot of people that are going to have trouble because they don't understand. They look at it and say, wow, why would you want to like shovel poop all day? And it's so much work and your back is always hurting and, you know, you've got no pension and you're like, you know, there are a million intellectual reasons why maybe something like this doesn't make sense. But again, that's part of the schooling. That's part of the programming. And so there's a lot we have to give up and then start realizing that in our education, and I say that in quotations, we have been miseducated about the ease with which these things are actually done. Growing food is extremely easy. Making medicinal tinctures and oils is easier than making toast in the morning. We have been told that this is to be left to the professionals, that this is to be left to the scientists and the people who know. And dear, you don't know. So go and learn microeconomics at school and let's talk when you want to go to business, you know, and you want to start something up. And that whole time when that was pushed by us as, don't worry, someone else is taking care of this for you. That's when we should have been paying attention because those are the most important things. Listening to our bodies, engaging with nature, using her as medicine, growing the food. Like there's no such thing as better quality food than what you could grow yourself. Okay. Even if you buy the soil at a box store and you put it in a plastic pot. Okay. Even then, you're starting with something that's not ideal, but you will still grow the best food on the planet. First of all, you're growing it and it's growing for you. That relationship alone is so lost, even when you buy your food from someone else. Doesn't matter even if it's an organic farmer. So that relationship is going to be rich. And if you've never grown anything before, you might look at something like calendula. It grows so easily and produces so many blooms for you, which are easy to dry. And then you put them in a jar with oil and you let them steep for 6 weeks and you've got calendula oil, which is antibacterial, antimicrobial. What else? I mean, it's an amazing plant that does so much for us and you've made your own medicine. That moment will blow your mind if you've never done this before. And then you look at it and you're like, holy cow, I am my own healer. That's right, babe. That's right. You always were. So that's the place we have to get back to. It's a few steps. But then once we get there, this is so natural. This is so easy. I know how to do this. There's no such thing as a brown thumb. It's just energetics. You're looking at that plant and you're going, oh no, I'm going to kill you. Oh no. Oh no. What's going on today? Oh no. What's with this leaf? Oh no. Oh no. And that plant is like, I can't thrive with this. I can't deal with you. So just remember that. And then there are obviously some technical stuff that you can't do much about. If you live in the city and you're trying to grow plants with water from your tap, you will notice that your plants are probably distraught because there's a lot of chlorine and fluoride in your water, not to mention all kinds of remnants of pharmaceuticals and things. And that's in your water, then that's in your food. So it might be good to source out some water at a local spring or even RO or distilled water. I got off track there, but I got to joking about why your plants would fail for you. And it's not just energetics. It's also that a lot of our sources are poisoned. Our food system is poisoned. Our water systems are poisoned. And we have to take more responsibility to filter those things through into our lives, to make good decisions about what comes into our homes and into our bodies. Because what I really noticed about when I started to eat organically, we got to meet Zach Bush, Dr. Zach Bush in person. He came and stayed at our B&B. And it really changed my life because his work on glyphosate and the impact of glyphosate on the human body really blew my mind. And I said, that's it, I'm done. He's also done work curing cancer patients using food. And in that work, he discovered that the patients that were eating grocery store inorganic food were not getting better, but those who were eating organically were getting better. So our food is not what we think it is. You know, you really do need to know your farmer because you need to know how your food is grown. And it starts small, but pick away at one more item every month. This month, I'm going to focus on my honey. How do I find a more regenerative honey producer? How do I make sure my honey is raw, not pasteurized and filled with other sugars? Right? Just pick one thing at a time. Start with your toothpaste or whatever, just like anything in your life. There are a million options out there to replace all of these things in our lives with ingredients that we can't explain and with price tags that, frankly, is like bankrupting most people. The lifestyle alone is crazy expensive. But when you start fermenting your own food and making your own tinctures, it is a lot less expensive. So that's another reason to do it. Reason number three.
I've spoken to folks who have come from various continents and have lived long and healthy lives. And many of them had one thing in common. They were all suggesting that you eat seasonally. Most people don't even have a clue what that means. I remember my mother telling me how excited they were in Europe when you got oranges for Christmas, because you don't grow oranges there. It's a tropical fruit. So it ended up being a gift because it was a rarity. Now you can get oranges in January, February. You can get pineapples in January and February. But to what degree your body is capable of metabolizing that is another matter altogether. Would you speak to that as well for us?
Yeah, it's worth it to walk around the grocery store, and when you touch the things that you're about to buy, question how far it's come to get to you and what kind of circumstances it would have to be under in order to be able to travel that great distance to reach you and all that time waiting on trucks and stuff like that. It's worth considering, because then you start putting two and two together and thinking about, wow, that's a lot of kilometers that my food in general cumulatively has to travel to get to me. So there are a lot of ramifications for getting used to eating this kind of way. I don't actually think that it's metabolically okay. I really do think that we need some things more in summer and winter. Now, I'm not a medical specialist, so like I can't really speak to that. But I personally feel, for example, that as I get into the winter months, I dig more into things like the sauerkraut that I have in the fridge. And why is that? Well, probably because I'm vitamin C deficient, maybe some vitamin D deficient, could probably really use a bit of a boost. The juice of the fermentation is actually really good for you. And the kids will have a shot of that in the morning to prep their belly for the day. So if we start thinking about what our bodies really want, again, unschooling process required there, then you will start to hear that voice inside you say, I'm really thirsty. And you're like, I'm hungry. What's in the cupboard? No. Listen, it's saying I'm really thirsty. Because a lot of times we're eating when really we're just thirsty. So that feedback loop, we have to reestablish that trust and that personal understanding, right? Which only takes a minute each day. Like when you feel a sensation, it's like, well, what do I really want though? What do I really want? And when you start doing that, you realize, geez, you know, I don't really want to eat pineapple. Maybe I'm from Canada. I was born here and my family been here for generations, let's say. And I don't feel the pineapple going into my body. It's just like, well, I like it because it's sweet. Well, maybe a spoonful of sugar would have done the trick, but you've trained yourself now to pineapple 3 times a week. Now I'm getting kind of off track here, but once we start listening, we start to realize that we don't actually want all the things that we think we want. We don't actually want chocolate cake for breakfast. You're just low blood sugar and you know, you woke up in the morning. So as I think we will naturally come away from it. If we aren't naturally coming away from it, then maybe considering how far the food has traveled is enough for you to intellectualize the problem. Start saying, really, how is a pineapple less than $3? It's kind of mind-boggling to me. It should be a lot more expensive if you consider what it's been through and what's been sprayed on it in order for it to be okay for that long distance and that period of travel. So if we want to intellectualize the problem as to why maybe we should reconsider, then like number one, your body wants certain things at certain times, so start listening. But number two, there are environmental and economic impacts to us wanting these things just because we want them.
Thank you so much. You've shared a treasure trove of information, and I am going to ask you for a link to your site where people can then sign up for your next course that would cover everything and a lot more that you're going to be offering in the winter months when people are in a state of hibernation and they can actually reap the benefits of having this preparatory knowledge so that they can embark on this journey in the spring doing it from a hands-on standpoint with the knowledge that you're offering. Could you share that link? And then our subscribers will get an additional bonus of you're demonstrating what you have harvested and give us a little visual.
Yeah,
I'd love it. So please share the link for all of those people who are listening to this.
It would be homesteadhaven.ca/course. And this course, we just finished one. And so we got to work with students during these summer season, fall harvest sessions. So the next course starts in January, second week of January, and we're going to build it out to 12 weeks. So it'll be a lesson every other week, and every other week we'll have specialists in fields like foraging or tincture making, mushroom growing, these kinds of things that are definitely related to permaculture food growing, but could maybe boost someone off into a new direction, beekeeping, those kinds of things. And the course is meant to take people who really have never grown food before into feeling really confident about their food growing, their understanding of how soil works, how you feed plants, how you benefit from things like the use of plastic or stones as thermal mass. So it's just really applied, which I think is a great way to learn, because we learn by doing. That's my way. And so on Thursdays and Fridays, students in the course are welcome to come to the homestead and work with us in person and get some actual hands-on applied experience about how it's done. So that starts in January, and that's a great time to take the course, because then that forays right into growing season. So it's a great timing.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And I'm going to end the recording for those people who are general listeners, and we're going to start our conversation with subscribers as far as what you might be able to demonstrate, as what outcome may be anticipated on the part of the future students who are listening.
This is our last episode of 2022. I would like to take this moment to wish everyone a very happy and healthy new year, and a special thanks to all of our patrons. If you feel this type of information has value, you can show your support by becoming a patron at patreon.com/godboxcafe and join us on the other side for some absolutely fantastic additional material. Be safe and be well.